God, you know that I need you, and I confess that. Ask for your help both to speak and to hear for all of us here in this room this morning, counting on you. Thank you, Lord. In your name, amen. The other day, I was bringing our little guy home, Levi. He's 8 years old. And if you, those of you who know Levi, you know he's a very energetic, very kind of a powerfully emotive, a lot of volume. You know, he's an intense little man, you know, and he was born that way. He was intense from the very beginning. And I guess all of ours are like that. So I don't know, some of you have like calm kids. I have no idea what that's like, no clue. And I realize that I may be on dangerous territory here because you're supposed to be kind of be careful about telling stories on your kids. But I figure like if you're 8 or below, I think I'm safe. Plus they're not here today. So I was bringing Levi home, and before we got in the car, I had noticed an interaction with a friend that just as a father, I thought there's something that just didn't quite sit well with me there, and I just wanted to talk to him about it. And so we got in the car, started to drive. It was just me and him, and I said, Levi, you know, back there before we got in the car, I was watching this, and you know, I don't know if you came across the way that you intended. I think maybe there's something there that that you would probably like to do differently next time. And we talked about that for a few minutes, and it really wasn't that big of a deal. I was definitely not worked up about it at all. It was a pretty kind of casual conversation between you know, me and my boy, and it was brief. I turned to him and said, so do you understand what I mean? And as I turned, I saw that he just put both of his hands up on his head, and he said, "Yes, Dad, I understand, but it's just that I have so many other things to worry about right now." And like a fascinating conversation took off from there, you know, and it really tested my dad's skills, because I know, like, this is a moment where I need to lean in and listen to him. I want to know, you know, what is that all about? It worked out pretty well. I got to ask him some questions, but it got intense on his side of the equation. You know, I mean, he did not wind it down from there. Let's just put it that way. But as I kind of just had to kind of listen and ask him some questions, you know, obviously inside I'm thinking, you're 8, right? What could you possibly have to worry about that's that big of a deal? This just puts you right over the edge, you know? And I sort of like, it took a little while. I had to kind of back it down. Like, it's okay, it's all right. But we talked about some things, and you know, they were all 8-year-old versions of things that, you know, we might be worried about. And we got to talk that night together a little bit and pray about it and everything. And boy, you know, it's hard though, because you know, I know that even as I'm sharing with him, I can actually relate with him, you know. I understand exactly what he means. I mean, it might be kind of an 8-year-old version of it. But I recognize that, you know, I recognize that feeling, like if there's one more thing, you know, and I wonder, like, have you ever tried not to worry? You know, I mean, I know that we all know that we're not supposed to worry and we're not supposed to be anxious, but have you tried? Has there been those times when you think, okay, wherever the worry meter is, I'm in the red and I need to dial it back. And so you think to yourself, I'm gonna stop that now. And it doesn't really work all that well, right? It's a little bit hard. Maybe if you have figured out some ways or whatever, you could share with all of us. I know a lot of you are a lot farther along in this journey than me, but I struggle with that for sure, being able to tell myself, to talk myself into not worrying. And I can get wrapped up around a lot of things, you know? And just like you, I think you probably know this, but you know, being a pastor that does not, you know, flip the switch where all of a sudden, you know, those things that we share together are now easy for me by no means, by no means at all. And so I think about, you know, family things, I think about, you know, money things, I think about future things, I think about health things, I think about you, and I can get really wrapped up in, you know, okay, well, did I offend someone, or did I frustrate someone, or what's really difficult? I can just say personally that I can sometimes worry about what I haven't done. You know, did I not say enough to here? Did I not show up enough here? Did I not? And so I can get really wrapped up not only in, you know, the things that, you know, are coming, you know, our way in the future, or what's going on in our lives, or what maybe I have done, or that I, you know, or to bother someone, or what I haven't done to fulfill some expectation. And those things really get me wrapped up. And I know if you're like me, sometimes it happens, you know, at night. And so you're laying there and it, you know, I start to get hot. Does that happen to anyone? Like, I'll wake up and I'm fine. But if I think about something, then I'm like, man, it's hot in here. And I look at the ceiling, and then now you start to worry about, well, what if I can't sleep tonight? And that's terrible. That will never work, you know. Fall asleep now, you know. It's hard to stop worrying, especially when you know you shouldn't be and you're trying not to. But I think that we probably all share that. In fact, I remember a conversation with a friend who was sharing some things that they were feeling very anxious about. And we talked through, like, what's the situation? What's the worst that can happen? What is it that you're afraid of? I mean, all those kinds of things that you do. And at the end, you know, prayed together, and the friend said, that was good. It was good to be able to talk that out. Thank you for that. I'm gonna try to really trust the Lord with this. I said, good. And then they paused and they said, but what if I worry about it some more? I'm not an expert, but I'm pretty sure now you're worrying about worrying, and that's definitely a step backwards. But we all do that. And of course, you know, one of my versions of that same thing is this very message. For sure, absolutely. You know, I go through my all normal process of, I mean, for me, it's pretty normal, feeling kind of ramped up and anxious and nervous. And just, it's for me, sometimes it can be a very fearful process. And one of the reasons why is because I know I'm not very good at it, you know? And that's a challenge. It's a challenge. And even though I know that hey, this is something from the Lord that we need to talk about, you know, I feel like, man, how well do I do? And you know, not that great. But I also realize that if we only talk about the things that we're currently feeling really good about, then we leave a whole lot of truth out of the mix, and we can go on for a long time and do that. And it's also one of the reasons why I'm really, really glad to be part of a church family where our conviction, our passion is to preach Christ. You know? And that's the goal here, right? It's not to just say, well, how do you worry? How do you overcome it? Well, Dan, how do you do it? What about Jesus? What does he have to say about this? Can he talk to us about this? Because we need some talking to, you know? So really what we want to do is just put the simple truth out on the table. And it's like a feast, you know? You put it out there, and it's good, and it's nourishing, and it's true. And I need to feed on it, and you need to feed on it. And sometimes we need to be able to remind each other, hey, you know, try that. That was good. And so I invite you to help me with that in our friendships and connections, and maybe we can be a blessing to one another that way too. I want you to think about a story, any encounter you want in the Gospels of Jesus interacting with people or the crowds or whatever. Most of you probably know some good ones, maybe some famous ones or one that's really special to you. But just think about any biblical story of Jesus interacting with people. Just try to start to picture it. Bring it up in your mind. Are you there? Are you getting it? Maybe you got a couple, whatever. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to help me out a little bit here and to share back with me, some of you anyway, share back with me maybe a one-word description. What do you see? Specifically, how would you describe Jesus in that story? Give me a word. Help me out.
Brave.
Brave?
Praying.
Praying. Very good. Bravely praying.
Compassionate.
Bold.
Calm,
angry. No, who said angry? Now, come on. No, that's true. It's true. That's true. In that particular story, we know which one you're talking about. That's true.
Grace.
What?
Grace.
Peaceful.
Reassuring.
Challenging, yeah. Confident. Very good. Yeah. Okay, I'll give you a little PS. I was worried about whether you would help me out on this, so I appreciate your help. Let's think of the same story. Keep the same story in your mind, and I want you to think about the people, the other people in the story, all the other people, maybe at one or encounter or the whole crowd or whatever. Could you describe in one word?
Frightened. Shame.
Shame, frightened.
Confused.
Worried.
Hungry.
Ooh, good ones, but what?
Hungry.
Hungry, yeah.
Anxious.
What was that?
Anxious.
Anxious, yes, anxious, yes, very good. Any others? Last two.
Obedient?
Yeah, for sure.
Failure.
Yeah. Yeah, failure.
Forgiven.
Judgmental, forgiven, good. So as you see these stories, you know, one of the things I think if you envision almost any of these encounters, what we always see in Jesus is this calm. He's the master, right? He's the master. And even in the angry moment, you know, he is in total control. This is not Jesus losing his temper or losing the moment. He is the master at all times. And he's addressing people and in their need in a situation in a way that is so masterful that it really messes with everyone else in the story. And as you begin to think about what everyone else is doing, almost every single time, people are basically just in their various stages of freaking out. As, you know, sometimes like it's people that are against Jesus and they're freaking out because they feel maybe displaced by him or challenged in that way. Other times it's like the ones who are very close to him or even being healed by him and they are flipping out. It happens all the time as you see it. And I think the reason for this is that in all of these encounters, what's happening is that Jesus is functioning and operating and speaking and loving and doing all of those things that you mentioned. He's doing that from a completely different perspective, a completely different kingdom than everyone else in the story, you know? And that's not a surprise to you, but if you think about those encounters, you can envision that how Jesus is operating from a completely different plane. His thoughts are different, his attitudes are different, his vision's different, and what he sees as important and what he recognizes is really going on and what really needs to happen is completely different than what everyone else is seeing because we're operating in a much lower set of realities. It's not that they're not real, it's just that they're not primary. But Jesus sees a primary reality, a kingdom which is above and consumes all the lesser kingdoms. And so that's why no matter what he says and no matter what he's doing, it always seems like people are off balance, you know? It seems like, you know, here's where we should go. Oh, no, we're going over here. Well, we better not talk to that person. Oh, okay, we're going to eat with that person. You know, the worst possible thing that you could say at any given moment, it seems like Jesus will just blurt out, you know what, eat my flesh, drink my blood. Jesus, you can't say stuff like that, right? And he always has people off balance because he's operating from a completely different kingdom, seeing everything completely differently. I thought last week Pastor Dustin just gave a magnificent message. I just love that word. It was very challenging and encouraging. And a couple of the examples that he used included Jesus asleep on the boat. Jesus was sleeping in the boat while they're out on the sea, and the storm comes, and you remember the story, the waves are so big, they're crashing into the boat, and these are experienced men, they know what they're doing, they have done all that they know to do to try to, you know, manage the situation, but it is completely out of control, and they are freaking out, and they are panicked, and they know they are about to die. This is it. Out of all the times that they've been out on the sea in rough weather, this is it, and they're going to die. And Jesus is asleep on this cushion, and they wake him up, and they what do they say? They say, Jesus, don't you care, right? Don't you care that we are about to die? And Jesus gets up, and he rebukes the storm. He says, knock it off, storm. Get back in line. This is not what you're supposed to be doing. However he worded it, it was in a rebuke. And he rebukes this storm. The storm calms down instantly, and off they go. Another story that Dustin shared was the 5,000 people who were fed. And again, if you think about this, you know, it's not just like you and me. It's after church. Dan's running late. We're all hungry. What are we going to do? This is thousands and thousands of people. And it wasn't planned. And so when you get that many people in that kind of need, and it's getting late and everyone's really hungry, just the volume of people, it really could be a complete catastrophe. You know, people start to kind of get faint and woozy, whatever. People could pass out. People could literally die. I mean, in a crowd like that, people panic. Things happen. It was a bad deal. And so they come to Jesus. They say, Jesus, what are we going to do? And remember what he says. He says, well, you give them something to eat. What? And well, what do you have? Well, we have these loaves and these fishes. What? Well, just let's start with that. And he prays and he begins to break the bread and pass it out. And as you know the story, 5,000 plus many, many, many more were fed. And they had all of this left over. It's crazy. Another example would be, when Jesus heals the crippled woman on the Sabbath. Now, he's done this with a couple of different people, but in that story, you know, this woman is crippled, and he speaks to her. He says, your infirmity is now made well. You are well, woman. Get up and go. And she does, and the people are indignant. They're freaking out. They're freaking out because they say, well, you can't do that on the Sabbath. To which Jesus basically replies, you can't do that at all. But you will even take your donkey who's fallen into a hole out on the Sabbath because you care for it, and they're still losing their minds. And I think what's fascinating to me is in these stories, not only do you have everyone thrown off balance and everyone freaking out, but like, how are they? You know, as Jesus sleeps in the boat, pardon me, I don't mean to be cavalier about this, but it's a little bizarre, don't you think? I don't know, like, the size of the boat and, like, if it's, you know, if he just, I don't know the details. I just think, like, the whole thing's going down. Everyone's panicking, freaking out. Everyone's worried. There's a lot of commotion. How is he sleeping in the boat? I don't get it. It's bizarre to me. In the story of the 5,000, it's absurd to say, well, let's just start with a few loaves and fish and start to break them. And I don't even know how that works. I can sort of understand you start to break the bread, and you break bread, and there's more bread, and you just keep on doing that, and there's enough bread, and everyone eats. I don't know how you do that with fish. You know, this is not my world. I don't really understand that, but there was just two fish, and everyone had bread and fish. And so he begins to divide the fish. I don't really get that. But he did it. And I wonder, like, other times, you know, even though it seems like absurd and bizarre, you know, it wasn't the only time that they were hungry. It's not like it's the only time. I mean, I'm surely the disciples at other times had other storms, right? You know, and what did they do? Did they learn from that? Did they say, okay, from now on, what we're going to do is rebuke all the storms? You know, did they stand up and say, well, I rebuke you, storm. Okay, not this time. All right, that's fine. You know, I don't know how they, but for surely from then on, they had other storms to deal with. They had other hunger to deal with. And in all of those, what we're seeing is that what Jesus is doing is addressing a much more important underlying, like an undertow of worry and fear and anxiety and a lack of trust and a totally different perspective than he wants us to have. He's dealing with things on a level that is not the outside crisis. And as I look around this room, and I know that there are important, big, sometimes scary things going on in some of your lives and your families, and a lot of you have been through many, many things, and you know what it's like to be afraid and to be worried and to have a hard time sleeping through it and to have the whole thing sort of swallow you up. I just wonder if the real challenge, if the real issue is not at all those external things, those big challenges that we face, but it really has way more to do with how we are dealing on the inside. And maybe even though all of our experiences and our worries might be different, maybe the biggest challenge that we have, we actually all share very much in common. And we need to learn together from Jesus the Master. How do you want me to deal with my worry? How do you want me to deal with my anxiety? Because it wasn't just about surviving that one storm or having some food in a hungry belly that one time, because there will be more of those times. And what am I going to do then? And how is this going to work as I grow? Don't you want him to teach you how to deal with that worry and fear and anxiety? I do. I do. Everything that he did there was exactly what the people needed, but they were still freaking out. Still freaking out. Michael de Montaigne is a French philosopher who 500 years ago said this: "My life has been filled with terrible misfortune, most of which never happened." Yeah. There's actually a study done recently that sort of fleshed this out about how at least 40% of the things that we worry the most about actually never occur. And then there's another 30, 35% that are things that we have absolutely no control over, or that just as human beings are completely outside. And it goes on from there. I want us to look together at what Jesus says about this in Luke 12. So go there with me for just a moment here. In Luke 12, 13, here's what's going on. The crowd is gathered. Jesus is teaching everybody. And a guy shouts out from the crowd. He has a problem. He's dealing with something, and we don't get the details here, but you can imagine that maybe he's been up at night. He's been frustrated. He's been angry. He's been fussing about this. And so he calls out in Luke 12, 13. He says, "Jesus, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me." And I don't know if you've been a part of something like that, with maybe someone has passed on, it's time for an estate to be divided up, and even in a very loving family, that can get a little dicey sometimes as people have special things and whatever. So, maybe that, or maybe a thing that you're thinking about, that, he felt churned up enough inside to call out in the middle of the crowd, "Jesus, fix this for me." And Jesus' response, I think, is pretty hilarious. He says, "Man," like he does, if you see that, he says, "Man, who appointed me to be the judge and the arbiter between you two?" And I he's probably not being sarcastic. I sort of like to imagine that he is a little bit, because it's a funny response to me, because you're the Lord of all. So it seems like you are appointed to do that, but he's saying, no, it's not my job to get between you and your brother and figure out who should get all the stuff. In fact, there he turns it and he says, actually, everybody, watch out. Watch out for greed, he says. He says, watch out for greed. And he says something very profound, very important. A man's life does not consist of his possessions. Ooh, now he's getting a little bit closer. And he tells this parable of a rich man who had this great crop. He had such a great crop that his question, literally the question on this guy's mind was, what am I going to do with all of this harvest? I know probably, is that something you ever worry about? Do you ever lie in bed at night and think, what am I going to do with all this money I'm making? I can't stop. There's just so much of it. What am I going to do, right? But that's what this guy is doing in this parable. What am I going to do with all of this crop? And so he decides, well, I'm going to tear down my barn. I'm going to build a bigger one. And he calculates a way to keep it. Just keep as much of it as possible. And Jesus says, you foolish man, don't you realize your very life will be demanded of you tonight, and who will get all that stuff? He makes this brilliant point. And I wonder if all the people listening in, okay, let's be honest, maybe a lot of us would have this attitude too. Probably some of the disciples were thinking, yeah, Jesus, you go after that rich man, right? I mean, I'm not doing that. I'm not trying to figure out, where I'm going to keep all my stuff. You get that rich guy, because those rich people, they don't. But then Jesus turns it on them. In fact, literally, you can see there that he turns to his disciples away from the crowd. Now he turns to his disciples. And there in Luke 12, verse 22, he says, "I tell you, do not worry." And now he's hitting home. He's hitting the mark with these guys who could stay a little bit distanced from this thing a minute ago, but he gets right to the core and he says, "I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, or about what you will wear. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothes." I imagine that when he said that, they took a gulp. Maybe you did. I have been. Ooh. And throughout the week, as I worry about my message about worrying several times, ooh. I want us to see here in the few minutes we have left just something very, very simple, and that's how Jesus addresses our worry. And I say simple because I really think that the Lord wants us to keep it simple here, but I don't mean simplistic. Okay? Just want to keep it simple. It's not simplistic. He addresses this in a way that is so helpful, so encouraging, so on target for you and me, that I really want us to see it here this morning before we go. I'm going to give you three L's. Pastor Sam likes to apologize when he gives points that alliterate. I don't know if you've noticed this or not. He gives like the three P's of something. He goes, I'm sorry, they're alliterate. And I say, don't tell him I talk to you about this. I asked him one time, why do you apologize when you alliterate in a message? And he said, well, because alliteration I find to be canned and cliche and condescending. And it's not true, though. I made that up. How does Jesus address our worry? Listen carefully with me now. He says, consider the ravens, verse 24. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? And since you cannot do this very little thing, you know, just add 1 minute, 1 hour to your life, why do you worry about the rest? In a word, logic. He's very logical. How many engineers in here are feeling good right now that Jesus is logical, right? None of them. Two, three. All right, good. Jesus is very smart. He's a master teacher. You know, things sometimes seem counterintuitive, but he's not a dummy, that's for sure. And he doesn't have his head outside of the real realm of what we deal with. He understands that very well. He's very smart, and he says very logically, it really makes sense to say, okay, have you ever worried about something to the point where it got better? Have you ever looked back and said, man, I'm so glad I was anxious about that. If I hadn't lost all that sleep, then this would have been a disaster. Like, that has never happened. No one has ever gotten to the end of their life and said, I'm so thankful for these last few hours I got by all of that worrying that I did back then. It's a perfectly rational, sound, important, logical, smart point that Jesus makes. You can't make it better by worrying. It's just true. And I would say that when Jesus teaches us with just straight up logic like that, the way that we ought to respond is this. That's a good point, Jesus. That's true. That's a very good point. Because what happens as we begin to get swallowed up in our anxiety and our worry and everything else that we deal with is that it starts to become a whole like a stream of lies and things that just get so heavy and so dark and so difficult. And so just the simple act of saying, wow, Jesus, that's a good point. I can't fix this by worrying about it. That's not going to make it better. I don't add a single hour to my life. You know what, Jesus? It's true. Just right there. Just start there. It's true what you say. And you're already well on your way. What happens next? He says, consider how the lilies grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things. And listen to this carefully. Ready? Your Father knows you need them. Your Father knows you need them. So seek first his kingdom, and then all of these things will be given to you as well. I want you to know, by the way, that he's not being condescending when he says, oh, you have little faith. It's a sweet little, I think, a very endearing thing that he says. It's like, if you could translate it this way, oh, little faiths. You know, it's like when I talked to Levi, I said, man, you know, he's struggling with something. I said, but you're brave, you know. And I'll say something to him, and in fact, I said the other day, we were walking, and it was really, really hot, and we're going across the parking lot, and he said, Dad, I'm getting lightheaded, I'm not sure if I'm going to, and I said, but you're brave, you can do it. He goes, yeah, I'm brave in the shade, you know? And I say, you can do it, you're brave, and so Jesus said, hey, little faiths, You know, that's not saying like, what is the matter with you? Don't you know? No, he's saying, come on, little faiths. Come on, buddy. Come on, little faiths. And it just shows that his heart as we walk with him is not to chastise and to criticize because we don't have it all together, because we don't have it all together. I definitely don't have it all together. And he says, come on, little faith. Come on, little faith. You know, it's a term of endearment, I think. And so as he describes this, what is he saying? He's saying, you know what? You're loved. You're loved. The Father cares about you. He takes care of sparrows and birds and everything. He clothes the lilies. You have a Father who really cares about you. So first he addresses our worry by saying, look, just logically think it out. You can't make it better that way. That's not helping. It's making it worse. That's a good point, Jesus. That's a good point. You're right about that. That's true. And second of all, I have a Father who loves me. He doesn't stop at the logic. That's where I usually stop. You know, humanly speaking, I go like, okay, good. So go get him and try to do better next time, right? It just, that's silly for you to worry about that. But you know, he doesn't stop at the logic. He goes, on top of that, I love you. You have a Father who really cares for you. In fact, when he says, give me your cares, give me your worries, he says, why? He gives you a specific reason. Why should we give all of our cares to the Father? Because he cares for you. He cares for you deeply, profoundly. He loves you. So logically, it's true. But past that, there's a loving Father who genuinely cares for you and will not let you go. That's how he addresses our worry. I love you. Don't you know I love you? Come on, little faiths. I love you. There's one more, and it is so big, so important. And I'm going to lay it out here for you, and I want you to just take it with you. In fact, if I could maybe give kind of one anchor point to kind of flesh this out and to hang on to this maybe in your car or on your mirror or wherever you need, here's where we go. Verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Let me read it again. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Jesus does not just address our worry with logic, although it's true and it's right. He actually even goes past saying, what you got to know is that I love you. And now he goes into a lavish grace. I mean, over the top, we have not begun to plunge the depths of how big this grace is that he would say, you know what? The Father is pleased to give you the whole kingdom. And that's not just so that the storms will calm sometimes or the bellies will get full sometimes or whatever, but so that that whole realm, that whole way of operating and seeing that's so different that you see Jesus in can all be yours because you're operating now from a completely different kingdom than the one that you were brought up in. And it changes everything. And it's so rich, so lavish, so amazing that he would say, he doesn't say if you do well enough, the Father will give you the kingdom. If you don't screw up, the Father will give you the kingdom. If you figure out how not to worry anymore, then he's going to reward you with some of the kingdom. What he says is the Father is pleased to give you the kingdom. He likes that. It's his pleasure. He wants you to have the same perspective that Jesus has. And look at what Jesus does with that perspective in the world. And that is there for you. And it's there for me. And so like when Jesus teaches us, how do you address your worry? Well, logically, let's start by, you're right, Jesus. That's a good point. It's true. When he addresses our worry with his love, then we need to receive it. We need just to start to say, thank you. Thank you, Father, for loving me that way. And instead of replaying all of the things that you're concerned about, let's start to replay all the things that he's done for us, all the things that he is for us as a perfect Father. You're amazing to me. Look at what you've done. You know, look how unfaithful I can be. Look how faithful you are. And you just rehearse that, you know? You receive that kind of love. And then beyond that, when he says, also, by the way, I want to give you the whole kingdom perspective, everything. I want you to have the whole thing. It pleases me to do that. I can't wait. And he said, come on, try it. Try it. Go ahead, sell some stuff. I know it doesn't seem like you have anything to give, but go ahead, sell some stuff. Give to the poor. Go ahead and you know, let loose of the handrails. Go ahead and try out a different perspective, because it pleases me to give the whole thing to you. And so there's where, as a church family, man, we've got to learn to help and serve one another and to challenge one another to see from a totally different kingdom perspective. And so if you want to know how Jesus would like to address your worry, let me take you right there to verse 32, and please take it with you as you go today. Don't be afraid, little flock, because your Father is pleased to give you the kingdom. And if you will ask him to show you how to flesh that out, then you will, before you know it, find yourself, myself, miles and miles and miles and miles away from those worries, and instead living in a kingdom. Simple truth. It's not simplistic. I need to feed on it. You do too. Let's pray. Lord, you're right. It's true. Thank you for loving us the way you do. Thank you for all the ways that you've been so perfectly caring and providing for our needs, protecting us, leading us, being gentle with us. Thank you that you're offering to give us the incredible grace of a completely different perspective, to hold, change every way, everything that we see and how we look at it. I pray that you help us to feed on it, be nourished by it, and changed. In your name, amen.